we know, the Shulchan Aruch tells us in the beginning of Hilchos Pesach, Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, 30 days before Pesach, Shalim V'darshim V'Hilchos HaPesach, we have to begin to look into and to understand and to ready ourselves for the celebration for the holiday of Pesach. The source of that is from Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says we learn it from Moshe Rabbeinu that he stood on Pesach Rishon and he already gave the instructions for Pesach Sheni. For all those who were unable to participate in Pesach Rishon, he already told them what to do for Pesach Sheni 30 days in advance. And from there we learn that any time we experience Pesach, we should have 30 days of preparation in advance. I saw a very interesting comment in Reb Chaim Friedlander's Sefer, Sipsei Chaim, where he says, the same way we have 30 days of Elul leading us into Rosh Hashanah and into that season, so too we have the 30 days leading up to Pesach that are supposed to be the Elul of Pesach. This is supposed to be our preparatory stages for celebrating Pesach in the proper way and having the opportunity to really appreciate what Pesach is all about. And the Bali Musar give a whole lot of different instructions for us during this time of the year of what we should be working on. I'll read one very short paragraph from the Sefer Pele Yoetz, who gives us just a framework of what to consider, and he says that the 30 days before Pesach, Tzarech Litein Lev, Laleches Bederech Tovim, Ulekayim, Miktzas Darke Hatshuva, Ulefi Godel Hachanaso, Kach Osa Tikun Gadol. He says that we should be thinking about Shuva. Why should we be thinking about Shuva? Well, the truth is, Shuv Yom Echa Lefnei Misascha. The Gemara says we should think about Shuva every day. But obviously, there's a heightened sense of Shuva here because the Radvaz asks in one of his very important Shuvas, he wonders, what is this about Bedikas Chametz? Why does the Torah expect us? Why do the Chachamim want us to go searching around our homes, crawling under the beds and making sure that there's no Chametz anywhere? What is the big deal? We don't find that we have an obligation to go around our homes searching for Basa B'chalav. We have many other prohibited items that a Jew is not allowed to eat, and yet we know that we don't have the same restrictions, we don't have the same expectation to make sure that we don't have any problem with any of those items. So why is it when it comes to chametz that we go so far to the extreme? And the Radvaz very famously writes, Al Derech HaMachshava, that the reason why is because when we search for the chametz, it is really supposed to be an exercise in searching inside of ourselves. And it's just supposed to give us an opportunity to think about the fact that we all have things in our lives that maybe we can get rid of. We all have items and aspects of our lives that maybe we can shed, that maybe we can eradicate, that maybe we can reconsider. And he writes that that's really what the exercise of Bedikas Chametz is supposed to be all about. I remember I once saw in the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes a fascinating insight that when the world was created, Adam and Chava, the original state of affairs was, Adam and Chava were perfect human beings. And there was an external challenge that they had to face, which was the Nachash. The Nachash was not a part of them, the Nachash was outside of them. It was a different reality. Then, Adam and Chava make that mistake. They were enticed by the Nachash. They end up consuming something that they weren't supposed to. And from that time on, we had an evil part of us that actually we consumed. It was no longer an external force. It was now something that is internal. It's intrinsic. It's part of who we are. That's never the way the world was. And our challenge, says the Nefesh HaChaim, is, ever since that time, is to figure out how to get that outside of ourselves and revert back to the way things used to be. Revert back to the way things used to be. And that, says the Radvaz, is really what the challenge of Bedikas Chametz is all about, for us to have an opportunity to reimagine life, to reconsider ourselves, to think deeply inside of ourselves and see what can we find in the recesses of our own personality to figure out what it is that can possibly or potentially be refined. On a more practical level, the Mishnah Berurah writes that leading up to Pesach, 30 days before, he quotes from the Maharil, who was the Gedolei Chachmei Ashkenaz, he says that it's important that 30 days before Pesach we already consider ourselves warned about chametz around our homes. And therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, Yizohar shelo lasos chametz ba'ofen she'yefshe lahasiro benakel. Now is the time to make sure that we don't spread chametz all over the house in a way that it's going to be very difficult for us to remove. If you have young children, that's a hard thing to do. If you are not a young child or you don't have young children running around your home, the idea is to try to already begin thinking about the reality that over Pesach we have to make sure that chametz is not to be found around our homes, and the time to start being mindful of that is now. And that, says the Mishnah Berurah, is the practical application of this idea. Now, Pesach in particular requires a tremendous amount of preparation. In some way, it's disproportionate to any other Yom Tov. We clean before Pesach. We cook before Pesach. We kasher. We do a lot of shopping. We have to tova lots of dishes. We have to sell the chametz. You know why we sell the chametz to the rabbi? Some people mistakenly think you're selling it to the rabbi. No, Rabbi Axelrod is not interested in having our chametz over Pesach. And you need to understand this when you sell the chametz. The reason why we sell the chametz to the rabbi is because mechiras chametz is actually a very complicated process. It's not so easy to do it correctly. And that's why we entrust somebody in the community who knows how to do this. If it was left up to us, we wouldn't do it properly. So we have entrusted Rabbi Axelrod to sell the chametz on our behalf. Not that we're selling it to him, we're giving him the ability to be our proxy, to sell it on our behalf to someone else. And that's why mechiras chametz is also a complicated idea to think about. Something that many may not be considering is the fact that even if you are going away for Pesach, there are guidelines and restrictions with regard to bedikas chametz as well. So even if you're going to sell your entire home, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you're leaving your house within 30 days of Pesach, which is already now, if you're going to be leaving your house within 30 days of Pesach, you have an obligation to do a bedika before you leave. Even if you're planning to go out of country, out of state, even if you don't plan to use your home at all. My father often tells the story how one year in Washington Heights, there were a number of families who were planning to go somewhere for Pesach. And on Erev Pesach in the morning, there was a snowstorm and they all got stuck. And it turns out, I'm sure it's happened more than once, and it turns out that they all had to stay in their homes for Pesach, which was fine, but the problem was they were totally unprepared. Now food, of course, their friends were able to help them out, or they were eating by neighbors or whatever it may have been, but the problem was that their homes were not at all prepared for Yom Tov, and they had chametz all over the place, and they didn't bother to do a bedika. All they did was a mechiras chametz, but in the end they had to live in their homes for Pesach, and they were totally unprepared for that experience. And that is why we have to make sure that we do a bedikas chametz before we leave. It's not a joke. Sometimes we're going to have to come back. Medical emergencies come up. If a medical emergency comes up and you have to come back to your home from wherever you are, you still have an obligation to keep Pesach. Even if somebody's in the hospital and the rest of the family members are in the house, we all have to make sure our homes are prepared for Pesach properly. And that is why it's important, the Shulchan Aruch says, that before one leaves, we should perform a bedikas chametz. If you're planning not to destroy all the chametz in your house, then at least put it away in a cabinet, tape it up, so that in case you come back to your home over Pesach, everything is settled and everything is ready for you to be used. So that is important for all of us to keep in mind. But in truth, the Ramchal writes that this idea of hachana, this idea of preparation, is really essential not only for Pesach, but it's something that all mitzvos that we perform should have some element of hachana involved in them. And the way he explains it, the way he describes it is as follows. Let's learn it together. Number Aleph, the Ramchal writes in the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim. We all strive, as he develops in the entire Sefer, we all strive for a life of Kedusha V'Tahara. We strive for a life of purity, of sanctity, of holiness. And says the Ramchal, Min ha-maisim ha-madrichim es-ha-adam, lavo lidei midazu shel tahara. What is it that brings a person to have this ability to live a life of purity, of being more divine, of being more holy? Hu ha-hazmana ledivrei ha-torah v'ha-mitzvah. That is when a person prepares themselves in advance for the engagement with any mitzvah that they will do. V'hainu. And what does that mean? Shelo yikanes b'kiyum ha-mitzvah b'peta pis'om. You should not engage in a mitzvah impromptu. You should not engage in a mitzvah unprepared. She'ein daito miyushev asalav. You're not going to be properly focused. V'yachol lehisbonein b'mashehu oseh. You're not going to be able to fully appreciate what it is that you are actually doing. Ela yazmin atzma ledavar. It is important, it is imperative, says the Ramchal, that we prepare ourselves in advance. If anyone came in late, there are still extra sheets on the bima. V'yachin libo b'misun, and we should prepare ourselves properly, ad she'ikanez b'hisponunus, until we have the ability to engage in this mitzvah with a sense of understanding, with an awareness, with a recognition, with a realization of what it is that we're doing. V'az yisbonein mahu holech lasos, v'lefnei mi hu holech lasos. Two things. Number one, it gives me the ability to understand, what am I doing? And number two, who am I doing this for? I often feel, you know, we have such a focus in our yeshivas on Limud HaTorah, And obviously that's what the focus of our educational system should be, because Liman HaTorah is very important. But what I find extremely lacking is so often we don't talk to our children about why we learn Torah. So all we tell them is learning Torah is very important. But did anyone ever bother to take a step back and ask the question, why is Liman HaTorah important? Do you realize that this is Torah Hashem Tamima? Do you realize that this is the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is why we study it? As the Nefesh HaChaim writes, every time we study Torah, we're getting a glimpse of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're getting a glimpse into the kind of reality of life that He wants us all to live. And once you master so many areas of Torah, you get a better, more rounded out picture of what that expectation is supposed to be. We don't often talk about that. And says the Ramchal, it's important that whenever we do anything that has any religious component, it's important that we take a step back and give ourselves the opportunity to understand both of those aspects of what it is that we're engaged in. Number one, what am I actually doing? And number two, who am I doing this for? What is the essence of what I'm doing? So you shake a lulav, you sit in the sukkah, you go blow the shofar, you read the Megillah. Who am I doing this for? I'm doing it because kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. We make a bracha before to give us that frame of mind, to give us that understanding of why we do the actions that we do. But that is very, very important. It's interesting that in Parshas Yisro, on the occasion of Kabbalah Satorah, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Allah El HaElokim, the pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai, and then Vayikra Elav Hashem in Ahar. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls him. Very interesting. The Arachayim HaKadosh is bothered. Would you ever walk into somebody's house unannounced, uninvited? You walk in through the front door, and then as they're coming down the steps, they notice that you're standing there, and they say, oh, please come in. Well, you're already there. And if you weren't invited, what are you doing here? So why did Moshe Rabbeinu come up the mountain before HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually invited him? And only after he was there, Vayikra Elav Hashem in Ahar, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to him and he says, you know, I have a job for you. I want you to give the Torah to the Jewish people. Well, if you weren't invited, why did you go? Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, let's learn it together. Tzarech Ladas, we need to understand, Lama Allah Moshe Kodem Sheyikra Lo Hashem. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu go up to Har Sinai before HaKadosh Baruch Hu invited him? Explains the Arachayim Pirush, the answer is, Kishakadam Huva Allah, when Moshe Rabbeinu took that step, when Moshe Rabbeinu showed that he was prepared for this experience, he knew exactly what was about to happen, then the response was, Tekef Karalo Hashem. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I understand. Now I see that you're serious. Now I understand that you're focused. Now I know that you really want to be involved in this activity because you have prepared yourself. And therefore, says the Arachayim, Yesh Lecha Ladas, Ki Bechina HaKadusha Lo Taktim, Ela Lemazmin Osa Umeir Al Hadavar. Sanctity will not come unless I take the first step and I show that I am prepared for it to envelop me in my life. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had to do just that. Just this past week in the Parsha Kisisa, I find Kisisa to be, I mean, the Gemara says we shouldn't say this, we shouldn't measure one part of Torah against another, but if I were able to, I always find Parshas Kisisa to be so fascinating. Almost every Aliyah is a whole different story, a whole different storyline, so much going on. But one thing that often gets ignored, because when we learn through Kisisa, we focus on the Egel Azav, and we focus on the Mishkan, and we focus on Bitzalel, and we focus on Vayomar Hashem Salachti Kidvarecha. There's so many other things going on. Something that is often missed is at the very end of the Parsha. What happens? Moshe Rabbeinu is so disappointed with everything that happened just now. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot believe it, and he decides, you know what? Moshe Yikach HaSa'ol V'Natalo Michutz LaMachana Harchek Min HaMachana. Moshe Rabbeinu decides, you know, I can't be here anymore. Look what happens when you stick around in the midst of the Jewish community. Terrible things go on. Even in Egel Azav, when my brother Aaron HaKohen was here, I can't trust them anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu pitches his tent outside of the Machane. What's the essence of that? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do that? V'hayakal mevakesh Hashem. The Torah then tells us, from that time on, anyone who was interested in being a mevakesh Hashem, anyone who wanted to actually have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yatza el ohel moed asher michutz lamachana. We're not going to make this so convenient anymore. Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching us, if you want something spiritual in your life, you have to work for it. It's not just going to be there when you open the front door of your tent. It's not just going to come in. From here on in, Moshe Rabbeinu says, you want something real in your life? You have to walk. You have to get there. Yatza michutz la'machaneh. You go outside of the machaneh and you will find the Ohel Moed. You will find Moshe Rabbeinu and you will be invited to partake in everything. But it requires some exertion on my part. It requires that I put myself out and prepare myself for that experience. That is what the Torah teaches us in this past week's parsha, Parshas Kisisa. So the Svasemes, one of the great Gedolim in Poland, the Ger Rebbe in the late 1800s, wonders, why is it that it is so significant, why is it such a priority for us to do hachana for any mitzvah? What is the reason for that? Why is it necessary? So we said, in order to really properly prepare ourselves, we need to put some thought in advance to it. But he explains two things that he imagined would make sense when we talk about hachana. In his mind, he says, Ein hadavar rachok, it seems to me, he says, that there is more power, more spiritual gain in the hachana that I do for a mitzvah than in the mitzvah itself, which sounds like a very radical statement. How can that be? But the Svasemes explains as follows. Number one, Etzem HaMitzvah, he explains, the mitzvah itself is only Sha'a Kala. How long does the whole thing last? The Hachana can be a lot of preparation in advance, far more expansive than the mitzvah opportunity itself. Think about if you've ever made a wedding and how much we prepare for that experience. So in some families, it brings about a lot of stress. Shouldn't be that way. I always tell a chassan and kala when I meet with them, even if your parents are going to be stressed, which is terrible, don't get involved. Do you want to show up to your wedding and feel that this is the source of stress in so many people's lives? Think about it. Think about it as a parent. Does it make sense that you're preparing for the happiest day of your child's life and all you're thinking about is how stressful this is? You know what? If there won't be place cards, your children will be married and they can still be happy. And if the invitation didn't come out exactly the way you wanted it to, I've seen many happy couples that are married and are doing just fine, and many unhappy couples who had the beautiful invitations where everything was perfect. Why do you want to be stressed? Why should your children be stressed? But we prepare so much in advance. And we book a caterer and we put down a deposit on a band and we make sure that we speak to a florist and we have the most quality photographers that we can get and we buy new clothing and we send out the invitations and we have guest lists and we figure out everything, every last detail and nuance that's necessary to put together this wedding celebration. And then when we get there, how long is the wedding? So it's months of preparation and just a few hours of celebration. But what would the celebration be without those months of preparation? What would it be? It would be lacking. The wedding simply would not be the same if you showed up and there was no food to eat and the kala didn't have a gown and there was no chuppah there and nobody was invited. This wouldn't really be a great celebration. And this is an amazing experience. But it's important for us to realize that in order to have a magical, memorable experience in our lives, it requires a lot of investment in advance. And therefore, says the Svasemes, that is the same by every mitzvah that we do. It requires investment. Now, that does not mean that we should be stressed about that investment. It just means it should give us the opportunity to realize that we're anticipating something very special. That's number one. Number two, says the Svasemes, the reason why Hachana is so important when we do a mitzvah is because, do you really believe that you understand the kavana behind every mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to do? A Baal Tokea once went to Rav Soloveitchik and he asked him, it's the right answer. Baal Tokea once went, even though West Hempstead did not sponsor this week, we got you next week, it's okay. So they got it. So the Baal Tokea once went to Rav Soloveitchik and he asked him on Erev Rosh Hashanah, so what should I think about when I blow the shofar? Which kavana should I have? So he said, I think the best thing to have in mind is that you're blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. At a minimum, that would be a great thing to have in mind. What are most Balei Tokea thinking about? Am I actually going to get this out? Is it really going to work? Do I really know how to do this? And I'm so nervous. You're not thinking about the mitzvah at all. So Rav Soloveitchik said, I would suggest the best thing for you to think about is that you're blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on behalf of everybody in the room. That's what you should be thinking. Now, if you look in the Siddur HaArizal and all the Mekubalim, do you understand the kavanos that they have, and yudke, vavke, this, and when you do the shvarim tshura, it's that, and when you shake the lulav, it's a million other things that we're supposed to be thinking about. I don't have any understanding what this all means, but those who live in that kind of world have a much deeper understanding than all of us. Those who know how to read these svarim certainly have kavanos that they have in mind that I'm not having in mind, and therefore says the Sfasemes. And do you think even the Arizal and even the Shalah HaKadosh and even the great Mekubalim, do you think even they got to the deepest essence of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants when he told us to shake the lulav and blow the shofar? Even they don't get it. So in the end, when I come to observe a mitzvah, I do what I'm supposed to do, but do I really get to the depths and the essence of what this is all about and what it represents in the spiritual realms? No. So there's something lacking in my mitzvah. But the preparation that I do for a mitzvah, there's nothing lacking in that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell me how to prepare for a mitzvah. All he said is, you better make sure on the first day of Sukkot, you have a sukkah to sit in. You have to make sure that on Pesach, you have matzah. And you have to make sure that you have a Chanukah menorah and that you have a Megillah to read. So all that I prepare in advance is my preparation, is my investment. And that's perfect. There's nothing impartial, there's nothing imperfect about what it is that I've done in my preparation for the observance of a mitzvah. And therefore, says the Sfasemes, that's something that we can think about, because that is something that is not beyond our comprehension. That is not something that is beyond what we think HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us. That is something that we can actually understand. Whatever I do is an investment in exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to be doing. And therefore, he says, that is why Hachana, in some way, can be greater than the observance of a mitzvah itself. A number of years ago, I came across a very beautiful passage in the Haggadah Shel Pesach of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was the Sephardic chief rabbi in Israel. And he has a Haggadah, which is called Avihem Shel Yisrael. Interesting name for a Haggadah. But in the beginning of the Haggadah, the page that everybody skips over, where he talks about the Halachas of Bedikas Chametz, I happen to have found something that I found fascinating. He writes a tefillah that he gave to the members of his family as they were cleaning the house for Pesach. Have any of you ever said a tefillah as you clean the house for Pesach? Well, that's going to change now. And I really think this just reframes everything. It reframes everything that we're doing. Let's see what he says. Tov haroi lechaven lefnei hanikiyos velo markach. He suggests we should all frame our minds properly. And before we go through our homes for Pesach and get them ready, we should say the following tefillah. Hareini menake es habayis u'mechavenas bazeh. I am cleaning my home, I am washing down the house, I'm getting it all ready. And in doing so, I have in mind the following. Number one, l'kayim mitzvah aseh min haTorah lahashbis se'or v'chametz. I'm doing this because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me that on Pesach, I'm not allowed to have chametz in my home. And as a result of that, ve'ata, hakel, hagadol, hagibar, v'hanora, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the mighty God, ta'azreini, you should help me. Lenakos es machshevosai. Help me to purify my own thoughts. Lenakos es ma'asai. I'm cleaning my home for you. I'm cleaning my home because you told me to. Because you want me to get rid of all those Cheerios that are all over the house. I want you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to help me purify and clean out myself. Because I don't have the courage to do it on my own. And I do need your assistance and your strength. Allow me the taher es beisi. Allow me to disinfect my home. Allow me to help refine my character and my relationships in my home. How much contention is there in a home before Pesach? How much are people on edge? And what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, allow me to take out of my home all of that argumentation, all of those disputes in my family, shetashpia ala bayis azeh shefa shel tahara v'kedusha, please allow me to have a sense, an aura of purity, of kedusha in my home. The same way I am ridding my home of chametz that you feel is improper for me to have, so too I ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to allow my home to be enveloped with a sense of kedusha v'tahara, amen v'cheinihi ratzon. And I found that to be such a powerful way to frame everything that we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. And it's important for us to keep it in mind. I saw in the Sefer of Rav Pam on Chumash an unbelievable insight where he writes that every year before Pesach, the parsha that we read is Parshas Tzav. It's usually Shabbos HaGadol. And in Parshas Tzav, we have a description of the Trumas HaDeshen. What is the Trumas HaDeshen? Not such an exciting event in the Beis HaMikdash. Trumas HaDeshen, in layman's terms, was who was going to have the opportunity to be the garbage collector in the Beis HaMikdash. That's actually what Trumas HaDeshen means. Trumas HaDeshen was somebody had to go every morning and clean off the ashes on the Mizbeach from the day before. Imagine the piles and piles of ashes that were on top of the Mizbeach. Well, you couldn't have a functioning Mizbeach the next day if you didn't first take care of what was there the night before. So somebody had to go early in the morning before they began the day of work and had to go clean off the Mizbeach. Now, as you can imagine, the Mishnah says that for all the other avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have lotteries because everybody was fighting. Everybody wanted to have a chance to do the avoda. So what do? They had a lottery. We don't want people fighting. It's just luck every day. It's a chance. Whoever gets the chance to get picked, that's who gets the opportunity to do the avoda. However, when it came to Trumas HaDeshen, nobody wanted to be involved. Who wants to go be the garbage collector? Nobody. So the Mishnah says that anybody who wanted to do it had full rights to do so, and nobody would stop you. There was no lottery, there was no fighting, and every day it worked out. There was always one person who was willing to go on top of the Mizbeach with the garbage can, with the pan, and clean it off. Okay, it was always one person. Says the Gemara, then, all of a sudden the tide changed, and it became the in-style thing to do. You know, sometimes this happens. You have something that nobody wants to do, and then somebody makes it fashionable, and everybody wanted to do it. And the Gemara says they started fighting. Every day the Kohanim were fighting, who's going to be able to go up to the Mizbeach, who's going to be able to clean it off? And nobody realized, you know, this is really not all that exciting, but okay. The Gemara then tells us that what happened was they changed the system. And because it was so fashionable, the Gemara tells us that the Kohanim used to run up the ramp of the Mizbeach, which was 50 or 60 feet. And they used to run up the Mizbeach, and whoever got up the ramp first used to be the one to have the opportunity. So the Kohanim, every morning, would go work out in the gym, make sure they were fit, and every day they would make sure to be the first one to run up the Mizbeach and have the opportunity to go clean off the Mizbeach. One fine day, says the Gemara, there were two Kohanim running up the Kevesh, running up the ramp. And both were fairly close to the top, and each one was looking at the other, and they realized, this one's going to get there first. Upon seeing his friend getting closer and closer, one Kohen goes and deliberately pushes his colleague off of the ramp of the Mizbeach. He falls down to the floor and broke his leg. And upon this very troubling episode, the Gemara says that they instituted, now we're going to have a lottery for this as well. We see that this is dangerous. This is a terrible outcome. Look what's happening. And as a result of that story, they changed the whole system. Sir Rav Pam wonders, we're trying to prepare for Pesach. And every year before Pesach, we read Parshas Tzav. Why do we read this story right before Parshas Tzav? Right before Pesach? What does this have to do with Yom Tov? What does the story of the Trumas HaDeshen have any connection to what we're about to celebrate on Pesach? And the answer, he writes, is how many people do you know that are very well-intentioned, that want to do service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Maybe not in the Beis HaMikdash, but in their own homes, in their own families, in their own communities. And in their excitement to try and be involved in their very well-intentioned efforts to try to be involved in something holy and something divine, they end off knocking people off the ramp and pushing people over along the way and destroying them as they're trying to get ever closer to the place where they feel they need to be. Says Rav Pam, let's remember, as we come to the celebration of Pesach, and we all take it very seriously, the Torah tells us that we have to make sure not to have chametz in our home, and even a mashahu of chametz, and we have to make sure to be mevar the chametz. And everybody is very well intentioned, but let's make sure not to push our children off the ramp of the mizbeach on our way. That's the message. Let's make sure that as we're involved in all of these preparations, and in all the wonderful things that we need to do, let's make sure that not one member of the family gets pushed off of the ramp on our way up. And we're all trying to ascend. We're all trying to get on top of the mizbeach and do things properly, but not at the expense of others who are going to be in the way. We have to do it with the proper attitude and the proper mindset. So our modern day homes are far more complicated and complex than anything that regular people had 100 years ago. I would venture to say that if the average person 100 years ago came to our homes, they would think that we are royalty. They would think that we are kings and queens and monarchs. Nobody ever had the amount of appliances that we have today, and the furniture and the accessories and the bookshelves and the books and the closets and the couches and the wardrobes and all the different rooms and all the different places in our homes that are dedicated to all the different facets of family life. Nobody ever had such a thing, and it's a bracha. And we're lucky that we live in a time that we can have all of this, but at the same time, as a result of that, sometimes getting ready for Pesach can be an extremely overwhelming pressure, great anxiety and strain on all of us, and it can cause a tremendous amount of tension in our families and in our homes. So, we need to remember, number one, as the Mishneh Berurah writes in Hilchos Yom Tov, Siman Tav Kuf Chav Tes, Mishneh Berurah says very clearly that we have an obligation on Pesach of V'samachta B'chagecha. Says the Mishneh Berurah, that applies equally for men and for women. We all have an obligation to celebrate Pesach. We all have an obligation, come Leil HaSeder, to have matzah and maror and dalet kosos and sipur yitzias mitzrayim. Everybody has those obligations. If we overdo it in the next 30 days, we're not going to have the opportunity to have Simchas Yom Tov. Now, by the way, because almost everyone in the room is females, and some of you or many of you have spouses, let me let you in on the little secret that the Gemara says. What exactly does Simchas Yom Tov actually mean? So the Gemara tells us it's important that each member of the family be catered to in a way that will be exciting to them. Says the Gemara, Anashim Beroi Lahem, V'Nashim Beroi Lahem, and the children are Beroi Lahem. So the Gemara says, how do we make children excited? You give them Kloyos Ve'egozim. You give them nuts. Today's generation, that won't work. It means you give them candy. In the days of the Gemara, they also wanted candy. So we want to give our children Simchas Yom Tov. Get something exciting for them in order that they should feel Simchas Yom Tov. Says the Gemara, how do you make a man happy? So the Gemara says, usually it's with basar v'yayin. Now it so happens, I can't drink wine. I can't tolerate wine. I think the most I can do is maybe, you know, the bar tenure. That's my extent. That's where I'm holding. You know, the grape juice with bubbles. That's where I'm up to. But for many men, maybe I have a woman's neshama. I don't know. But for many men, wine is what makes them very happy. And the Gemara says, therefore, when they try to engage in Simchas Yom Tov, a man should have basar v'yayin. A man should have meat and wine, because that will be a real expression of Simchas Yom Tov. And what about women? What about women? Says the Gemara. Jewelry. New clothing. Yes, your husbands should be providing you with new clothing or with jewelry. Or you should be providing yourself. That is Simchas Yom Tov. That would be the expression of Simchas Yom Tov, that a person should have the opportunity to really feel something special and to really go out and pamper themselves, to be able to feel that expression of what Yom Tov actually means to them. And that really is something that the Gemara tells us very clearly, that we have an obligation on Yom Tov to have Simcha, and therefore it's important that in the days leading up to the Simcha of Yom Tov, that we don't overexert ourselves, that we don't exaggerate, that we don't go too overboard with our cleaning for Pesach. You want to do a spring cleaning? Do it on your own, but don't blame it on Pesach. When it comes to cleaning for Pesach, we have to keep everything in perspective. Sometimes the Gemara tells us, Kalamosif Goreya. We actually learn it from the story of the Nachash. If you add, sometimes it takes away. Too much, really, sometimes takes away from our experience. And the same, I think, goes when it comes to cleaning for Pesach in our homes. We all have the opportunity to clean for Pesach, but to do it in moderation. We don't have to go to the extreme. The Shulchan Aruch does say very clearly that if there's a room in our home that throughout the year we do not bring chametz into, we don't have to check that room. As simple as that. So, again, as I said, if you have young children, then everywhere, every drawer, every closet is going to have something in it. And yes, you do need to check. But if that's not the reality of your home, there's no reason why you have to assume that in certain rooms in your house there's going to be chametz. You don't need to check those rooms. There's no reason to assume, the Mishnah Berurah says, that in the closet that has all my clothing, why do I have to take every sweater and every article of clothing out to make sure that I don't have chametz in there? Why would you ever put chametz in those clothing drawers? You wouldn't. Now, what you do need to check is that maybe in your coat pockets, you were leaving a wedding one day, and as you were leaving, they had those nice warm cookies on the way out, and maybe you stuffed it into your pocket because you were just too embarrassed to walk out with it in your own hands. Yes, we all know you. So maybe you need to check your coat pocket to make sure that that cookie is not still there. But in general, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you have a place in your home where it's a makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, we don't need to be concerned. We don't need to be worried. The Ramban actually writes in the end of Hilchos Nida, he has an amazing comment, where the Shulchan Aruch talks about a chatzitza. When one goes to the mikvah, a man or a woman makes sure not to have a chatzitza. So the Ramban says, Lo tov hayosa adam machmir yosa midai. It's not good for a person to be so machmir. Umechapes achar hasvekos lifsol tvilasa. What are you going to say? A woman's going to come back from the mikvah, we're going to start asking, oh, maybe there was something on here, or maybe there was there. I get these questions all the time. People come back, and it's really an expression of OCD. It's not an I'm not making fun. It's really an expression of people who just have something else that's troubling them. It has nothing to do with the mikvah. It has nothing to do with chatzitza. It's the fact that this is an area of life that we can really obsess over. But says the Ramban, it's not healthy to do that. That's not the right thing to do. And that's not really a chatzitza. You don't have an obligation to start looking and checking and redouble-checking. It's not the expectation. And if we're going to do that, all that's going to end up happening is we're going to end up hating the mitzvah that we're doing. So that's not the objective. That's not what we're supposed to do. Says the Ramban, we have to keep everything in context, and I think the same goes when it comes to bedikas chametz and cleaning out our homes as well. Similarly, we learn in the Shulchan Aruch that if you have pirurim, if you have small crumbs or morsels of chametz around the house that are metunaf, that are dirty, I would venture to say that if we have slats in the floor and there are little crumbs of chametz that are there, nobody would ever bend down, as hungry as you might be, you would never bend down onto the floor and pick it up and eat it. And it's been mopped over 100 times and it's been swept over 100 times and you're certainly not going to make any usage of it as far as achilas chametz goes on Pesach. And therefore, as a result of that, the Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly, Pirurim shehim pachos mikazayis ametunaf tzas. If you have something in your home that is just a morsel of chametz, a very small particle of any item of chametz, and it's a little bit dirty, lekuli alma ein tzarech levar, I don't have to worry about it. So again, let's just keep it all in perspective. Let's think about what we need to do, and perhaps what we do not need to do. Someone did call me with a fascinating shaila, that they said that one of their children went to Italy and brought their parents home a gift. What they brought their parents home was a magnet for the fridge. I said, if you sent your child to Italy, I think what they should bring you home is a little bit more than a magnet, but okay. The child didn't call, it was the parents. So the child brought home a magnet, and it had pasta in it. It was a magnet made of glass, and it had pasta inside of it, and the pasta was glued together, and this person wanted to know, do I need to rid this from my house on Pesach, because it's actual pasta? It's a great question. What? I have a relative, and I noticed in their home that one of the cabinets actually has a pasta and spaghetti, I don't even know what it's called, but that's the design on the outside of the cabinet. It's fascinating. It's like they dyed pasta and they put it there. And I've always wondered that. What do you do on Pesach? I mean, I know what they do on Pesach. They don't do anything. But I asked this person in the magnet, what does it look like? So they said, well, it's raw pasta, but there's glue all over it. So if there's glue all over it, I would imagine that's nifsal me'achilas ha'adam, nifsal me'achilas ha'kelev, and maybe that would not be a problem. I just thought it was a very interesting shaila to think about, and if you have that situation, maybe you should be mindful of that as well. There's a story told about Reb Shmuel Salant that although the Shulchan Aruch says, makom she'ein machnisim bo chametz, when you have a place that no chametz really goes in, on any normal course of events, you don't have chametz being brought into that location, you don't have to check it. However, Reb Shmuel Salant, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim for almost 70 years, Reb Shmuel Salant said, the truth is, you have to sometimes think creatively about where chametz might actually be. And he told the following story. He said that there was a young couple that got married right before Pesach. And the first day, Chol HaMoed Pesach, the father of the Kala comes to the Reb Shmuel Salant, who was the Masada Kedushin at the wedding just a week before. And he says, the shidduch is off. The couple's getting divorced. I need you to write a get. This boy is not careful. He doesn't understand anything. And the Reb Shmuel Salant said, let's slow down. What happened? Tell me what happened. He says, well, he promised my daughter that he was a real Ben Torah. He was a Yarei Shamayim. He cares about mitzvos. And I'm telling you, every time she walks around the house over the first days of Pesach, she keeps finding chametz all over the place. It is clear to me that he did not do a bedikas chametz properly. My daughter can't be married to such a guy. So Reb Shmuel Salant was a little surprised. He said, I know this boy. I know his family. How can it be? Doesn't make sense. He calls the boy in and he says, let me talk to him. The boy walks in. It was Chol HaMoed Pesach. He was a Yerushalmi Yid. And as he sits down, Reb Shmuel Salant says to him, okay, get comfortable. Don't be so nervous. I want to talk to you. I just want to see what's going on. So he says, what do you mean get comfortable? What do you want me to do? I'm standing in the presence of Reb Shmuel Salant, the Rav of Yerushalayim. He says, well, you came in your strimal with your coat. Take your coat off. Put your strimal on the rack. Take it easy. Sit down. Takes off his strimal, and all of a sudden, wheat kernels start falling out of his strimal. What happened? The minhag in Yerushalayim always was that when a chassan got married, they would throw wheat on him as he walked to shul. There was some significance to it. The Gemara mentioned such a thing. His ufruf was a week before Pesach. He didn't think that he had particles of wheat that were stuck all over his strimal. Who would think to check that? And as he took it off, Reb Shmuel Salant was not aware of it either. Reb Shmuel Salant went back to the father and he says, now we understand. Every time your son-in-law got ready to go to shul, every time he got ready to go out of the house and he put his strimal on the first days of Pesach, there were kernels of wheat falling out all over your house. Shmuel Salant said he learned from that story that although it's true that a makom she'im machnisim bo chametz, you don't have an obligation to check, but maybe you have to think creatively of where chametz may have ended up. And that's something that we have to be mindful of as well. So we might not have an obligation to check everywhere, but when deciding what a makom she'im machnisim bo chametz is, again, as we mentioned, you have to think carefully. If you look in the psukim themselves, we are given pretty simple instructions on how to observe Pesach. The Torah tells us, very basic idea here in number Dalet, Shivas yamim se'ar lo yimatzi bibateichem, lo yir lecha chametz v'lo yir lecha se'ar. The Gemara says you're not allowed to have chametz in your home. And from here the Gemara learns, Shelcha yatarowe aval ataroa shelacherim. The Gemara says that you are not allowed to have your own chametz, aval, but you are allowed to have the chametz shelacherim in your property. Now what exactly does that mean? That is a very good question. Does that mean I can just have my neighbor's chametz and I can give my neighbor my chametz? Of course not. That's not what it means. We all have an obligation to get rid of all of our chametz. I remember very vividly, I was just married and we were living in Washington Heights and it was Erev Pesach and I got a frantic call from a friend of mine who was married with a few children and he was in Baltimore by his in-laws for Yom Tif, and he called me with the following problem. And I'm saying this only because I think it's important that all of us make sure not to make this mistake, because maybe it is a common mistake that people make and you're just simply not aware. There are some women who have an awful minhag. And I say awful minhag because there is no basis for it and it makes no sense and it's only something that can cause problems. It is a minhag that some women have that when you do hafresha schala, you put the hafresha into a small bag and you put it away in the freezer and then Erev Pesach, you burn all the hafreshas together. Horrible minhag. Horrible minhag. Why is it a horrible minhag? Number one, because you're supposed to do it right away. But even leaving that aside, what happened was this woman's family had the minhag that they used to put it aside and burn it Erev Pesach with the Sreifas Chametz. They went to Baltimore for Yontif. She was packing up her family. And of course, the last thing that she's thinking about is all the hafreshas from the whole year to take them along to Baltimore. Who's going to do that? So they didn't. And they called me Erev Pesach in a panic. So why should they panic? They sold the house. So what's wrong? What's the problem? So you sold the hafresha schala also as a part of your house. So what's the big deal? The problem is I can't sell somebody else's chametz. The hafresha does not belong to me. The hafresha officially belongs to Shevet HaKohanim. So I can't sell chametz that belongs to someone else. But I have achrayas, I have responsibility for the chametz that belongs to the Kohanim that's in my house. That would have been an absolute violation of Bayira, Bayimatzei, Mida Araisa on Pesach. That would have been a problem, because you can't be Mevatel that, because it doesn't belong to you, and you can't sell it because it doesn't belong to you, and here it is in your freezer, and you have Achrayus, you have responsibility for another Jewish Chametz that's in your house over the duration of Pesach. They call me up, can you figure out what to do? Now what am I supposed to do? What should I do? Run to the house. It would be nice if they left me a key. I had to drive to Far Rockaway, where his parents lived, pick up a key, go back to the city, go on Erev Pesach, and go through his freezer, take out all the hafrashas, and go burn it on Erev Pesach. Not a good idea. Really not a good idea. And maybe you're not always going to have a good friend like me who's going to do that for you. But a really bad idea. This minhag makes no sense. The minhag really has no basis at all. And it's something that can be a tremendous michshel. I would imagine she is not the only one. She is probably the only one who actually realized it on Erev Pesach. There are probably many who left them in the freezer and didn't realize you're in violation of Bayiro, Bayimatze, Mida Araisa if you leave that in your freezer on Pesach. And there is no way around it. So it's important that we be mindful of that. And maybe this will be an opportunity for us to stop that horrible minhag and be able to think once again about doing the hafrasha and burning it immediately, which is really the proper thing to do. The Aruch HaShulchan wonders, today, we all have the practice that in advance of Pesach, we clean our homes, and basically by the time Bedikas Chametz comes around, there's nothing really left to do. So what exactly are we doing? That is a great question. Look at number hey. The Aruch HaShulchan says, Veda, you should know Shiyei Shalim, there are those who ask, Lefi min Hagenu, according to our practice today, Shanashim Menakim HaChadarim VaHatevos, that families go and clean out the houses. We're spending weeks in advance getting ready. By the time it comes to Arla Arba Asar, by the time it comes to the Leil Bedikas Chametz, Kvar Lo Nimtza Shum Chametz, there's nothing there. So what are you being bodek? Zulas Masha Menichim Lechol Balayla Ulamachar Baboker. All you have left is what you left aside for breakfast for the next morning. But what am I being bodek? Behemishumarim. And whatever I let aside for tomorrow's breakfast is set aside in a cabinet, is set aside with the cereal boxes, is set aside in my refrigerator. I know exactly where it is, so what am I checking for? So why are we making a bracha? Didn't we know that we already cleaned out the whole house? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, it's a really great question. However, he says, number one, you should know when we make the bracha al bir chametz, part of what we have in mind is not only that we're going to check the house, but also that tomorrow we're going to burn any chametz that is excess chametz in our property. Number two, he says, that maybe we're going to find something. You never know. And therefore, you should do some kind of check around your house to make sure that there is no extra chametz around, which is why the Ramah says that we have the minhag today that we put out 10 pieces of chametz. There are many who do it. There are some who do not do it. But perhaps nowadays, the Shabbat Zion writes, nowadays when we clean our homes in advance and we're pretty much certain that we're not going to find anything, so nowadays we should make sure that we really put out the 10 pieces of chametz, because nowadays it's more relevant than it ever was. Nowadays we try our best to be ready before Pesach, and therefore when we come to actually doing the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, we should try to put out the pieces in order to be able to make the bracha without any hesitation at all. I know that when I was growing up, my father took forever to do Bedikas Chametz, even though our whole house was clean. I don't know, he took Bedikas Chametz very seriously. He literally went through every single room. And it's important to be aware of the fact that, unfortunately, fires happen every single year on Leil Bedikas Chametz. And it's a tragedy. Let's make sure that we do our best to do everything that, chalila, that should not be an experience that we go through or that anyone we know goes through. And that is why the Achronim write very clearly that using a flashlight is the same as using a candle. There should be no hesitation at all to use a flashlight. The way my father did it at home was he always lit a candle, left it on the dining room table. In the first room, he just put it there, then we turned the lights on. And it's true, the Gemara says that we should not do Bedikas Chametz to the sunlight outside because there's going to be shade and it's going to block certain parts behind the couch. But now that we have a whole room is flooded with light, there's no concern. You can see everything. The light is really dispersed across the whole room, especially if you go with a flashlight. There was no reason to be walking around your home with a candle, especially in places where it can catch fire. Let us do our best to make sure that we are as safe as possible. As we said, cleaning and readying our homes for Pesach is certainly difficult, it's demanding, and it's sometimes something that we see as a tremendous strain and burden on all of us. But when doing so, I think it's important that we keep perspective. if we love what it is that we do, then we're excited to do that. We're excited to be involved with it. There's a mashal that was told by the Dubna Magid. The pasuk says in the Navi Yeshaya, "V'la'osi karasa Yaakov ki yagata b'Yisrael." It's going to be the haftarah for Parshas Vayikra. "V'la'osi karasi Yaakov ki yagata b'Yisrael." Hard to really understand what that pasuk actually means, and the Dubna Magid gave a mashal to try to appreciate the meaning behind that pasuk. In fact, the Kotzker Rebbe said about this mashal that he believes this was one of the mashalim of the Dubna Magid that was said Beruach HaKodesh, because it so accurately describes what the pasuk actually means. And he gives a mashal to a wealthy businessman who had a lot of packages that needed to be picked up. And every day the UPS was coming and they were delivering everything. One day, he gets a notice in the office that he has a package at the port that cannot be delivered, but it needs to be picked up. Okay, so he sends one of the younger, more junior members of the office staff to go to the port and pick it up. It's a couple of hours later, and he's still not back. And he can't understand. The port is not so far away. It's a 5-minute drive. What happened? And he shows up, and he's so exhausted, and he's worn out, and he's sweating. And he takes one look at this young, junior member of his staff, and he says, "Go back. You obviously brought the wrong package." And he turns to him and he says, "I brought the wrong package. You didn't even open it up. How do you know it's the wrong package? You didn't even look at the label. Why don't you first look at it? And if there's a mistake, I'll bring it back." He says, "I know without looking that it's a mistake." And he asks him, "Do you know how hard I just worked to get this package here? Do you know how long this took me? You know how difficult it was to schlep this through the streets to get it back to the office? But it's the wrong package. You see, I ordered feathers. I know that if you work this hard, and if you're this sweaty from carrying a box of feathers, it means you took somebody else's package. And this is not it." Said the Dubna Magid, when we think about our observance of Torah and mitzvos, when we consider what it means for all of us, the Torah tells us, "Taimu ru'u ki tov Hashem. Tov li toras picha me alfei zehav v'chesef. Derachei adar cheinoam v'chol nesivaseh ha-shalom." Our observance of mitzvos is something that is supposed to be pleasurable for all of us. If you're sweating, if you're working so hard, if you're so anxious and so uncomfortable, you got the wrong package. Lo osi karasa Yaakov ki yagata b'Yisrael. If you're working that hard, it's a different religion. This is not us. This is not the way it's supposed to be. This is supposed to be Derachei Adar Cheinoam. A life of Torah mitzvah should be one that is pleasant, one that is enjoyable, one that we feel content and satisfied with, not one that we resent and feel anxious about. And says the Navi Yeshaya, that's really what this is all about. I think about 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to speak with Mike Pompeo, and I remember I really didn't know what to talk to him about. So I just asked him, I said, "You know, I'm curious what it was like. Like, what was your schedule every day being a Secretary of State? Just interested to know." He says, "Okay, I'll tell you." And he tells me, early in the morning, we had briefings every single day from the CIA and the FBI and this organization. That one came. And then we had to share the information and figure out which information needs to be shared with other senior officials and which information we have to hold for ourselves. And a whole day of meetings. And then he said, "At night you're on call." And he said, "We're putting in 19-hour days every single day. And in the middle of the night I can be woken up at any time." And he said, "The president can call you at any time and just say, 'You're getting on Air Force One and you're flying across the world.' And I have no option to say no. It just, it is what it is." So I asked him, "I'm curious, with this kind of schedule, coming from being a member of Congress in Wichita, Kansas, what was it like having that transition? Going from a community where maybe you didn't have this much going on, to then being thrown into a position of being the Secretary of State of the United States. What was that like for you?" And he said, without hesitation, "When you work for the most powerful person in the world, nothing is hard." I said, what a Musar Haskell. What a Musar Haskell. when you work for the most powerful person in the world, nothing is hard. So I started to tell him this part of the Dubna Magid. I told him the mashal, and I said this is the way he explained a pasuk, and I couldn't remember where it was. But I remembered the pasuk, the phrase. So I said, Lo osi karasa Yaakov ki agata b'Yisrael. I translated it. He says, oh, that's in Isaiah 43. I was so embarrassed. I was so ashamed. I said, here you have a religious Christian, a religious Catholic, who knows Tanakh better than I do. What a musr he just gave me. Number one, you're such an Am Haaretz, you don't know Tanakh. Number two, when you work for the most powerful person in the world, what are you embarrassed about? What are you afraid of? You're getting anxious? You don't realize it's the greatest privilege of your life? And I walked away. I felt so small. But I said, this is such an amazing message. You know, in Parshas Re'eh, I'll close with this. I see it's the time is up. Parshas Re'eh, the Torah talks about all the giving of Trumas and Maisers, everything that we have to give away from our crops. So we know that there's Truma Gedola, there's Maiser, Maiser Rishon, Maiser Sheni. Maiser Sheni has to be taken in the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the seven-year cycle of Shemitah. Four times it has to be brought to Yerushalayim, and you have to eat all of those fruits in Yerushalayim. Now that's not so easy. If you live in Yerushalayim, it's easy. If you live in the suburbs of Yerushalayim, simple. But think about the farmer who lives out in the Negev somewhere, or out in the Shtachim, and they didn't have cars, and it would take you a week to travel, or 2 weeks to travel, with all of your fruits. How are you going to get all the fruits to Yerushalayim? So the Torah actually addresses that poor farmer. What do we do for that person? Says the Torah. Let's read the pasuk together, number Zion. Ki yirbe mimcha haderech. When you're going to live very far away from Yerushalayim, and you're not going to be able to transfer all of your fruits that just grew and bring them to Yerushalayim to eat them there, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because the place is simply too far away. Asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha lasim shemo sham. So in that case, the Torah says we have an eitzah for you. What should he do? You should be poda all the fruits onto money, transfer all of these fruits onto some coins, bring the coins to Yerushalayim, then you transfer it back once you get there, a whole complicated system. Okay, the Alshech, in his commentary on Chumash, writes, what does it mean? It sounds like it's repetitive. Look back. Ki yirba mimcha haderech, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. It's the same thing, right? It's too far away, because it's too far away. Now we know every word in the Torah is carefully measured. So why does the Torah repeat this phrase? Number one, ki yirba mimcha haderech, when the road is too far. Ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because the place is too far. It's the same. So ask the Alshech, what does the Torah mean to teach us? And number two, he says, what does it mean, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because the place became too far away? The place, meaning the Beis HaMikdash, stayed in the same place. That didn't move. You moved. So it shouldn't say that the place moved, the place got too far. It should be because you moved away too far. So those are the two questions of the Alshech. Number one, why does the Torah repeat itself? Number two, ask the Alshech, the Torah should have phrased it as, Ki ata terchak mehamakom, because you have chosen to move far away from the place, from the Beis HaMikdash. Explains the Alshech. What it means is, if you feel that this is too difficult, if you feel that this is too far, it's only because ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because God is very distant from your life. When you don't feel a personal connection to something, you have no interest in investing in it. When somebody, Rahman al-Itzlan, needs to get a treatment, when somebody is going through a struggle of infertility, and they're told that there's a clinic on the other side of the world. I just spoke to a couple who told me that they were recently told that in Japan there's some kind of breakthrough, scientific breakthrough, that the fertility clinics here told them they should go there for. And they were talking to me about it. Not once in the conversation did they say, you know, we're going to fly to Japan. That wasn't part of the consideration. That wasn't the discussion. Because of course you'll fly to Japan. Because you actually care about it. And you won't complain. Because you want to have a child. Because it matters to you. And you'll do anything in the world, even if it means flying to Japan and staying there for a month. because that's something that's very personally important to me. And therefore, I don't even realize the distance. I don't think about that. It's something that's valuable to me, and I'm willing to invest in it. And the same goes for so many other aspects of our lives. When we feel a personal investment because we actually care, it makes it much easier to be able to do the job that we're doing. Says the Al-Sheikh, what the Torah is teaching us here is, if you want to understand why it is, ki yirba mimcha haderech, why do you look at the travel from the Shtachim, from the Negev, all the way to Yerushalayim, and you say to yourself, wow, this is so overwhelming. How am I going to do this? How am I going to get to Yerushalayim? What, am I going to take 2 weeks off of work to get there and get back to eat my Ma'aser Sheni? And how am I going to schlep along all of these fruits? What am I going to do? To that, the Al-Sheikh says the answer is, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. The problem is that God is not the main focus of your life because you're not invested in God. If you were, you wouldn't even notice. You wouldn't care because you would be excited to do it and you would go to the other end of the world to do it. But the problem is, it's a mindset. It's something that's lacking, not in your ability, but in your interest, in your want, and your desire. If we think properly about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we understand that being a part of something which is the most powerful entity in the world is the greatest privilege of our lives, and in doing so, there is nothing that is difficult in that kind of life. Because you realize how blessed and how privileged you are to be in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times, and to be serving Him, la'avda b'chalavavchem. In doing so, I hope that it will make our preparations for Pesach just a little bit easier, just a little less anxiety, give us the opportunity to frame our minds properly for what it is that we're about to do, for why it is that we do it. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day, v'chaye olam nata b'sochenu. What does it mean? That He allowed us to touch eternity. It means throughout all of the different experiences that we have, engaging with mitzvos that we do throughout the year, all of those are engaging with eternity, are engaging with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the Divine. What a privilege. What a pleasure. And when you work for the most powerful person in the world, nothing is hard. Wishing everyone a wonderful day.